You're listening to Mrugashira, a podcast for PR and communication folks.
He's a senior editor, writer, mentor, consultant, and commentator. He has more than 30 years of experience in both Indian and international media environments. He's worked for media entities including Reuters, The Economic Times, Business Standard, Hindustan Times, after starting out in the Times of India Group. He's covered topics ranging from technology to politics. We spoke to Madhavan Narayanan on a range of topics from the state of journalism in India to government's decision to regulate digital news media and OTT.
Media almost 100, 150 years ago was supposed to be the watchdog. And now if you see particularly from a TV channel point of view, whether it is English or regional or any language media that you take in India, it's become more of a barking show. Yep. Many people say that it is also because, you know, viewers want it. I mean, and these channels are playing to the gallery. So, is that how it is? Is that because there seems to be some amount of viewership for these kind of channels as well?
Let me bring in a technology and economic angle to this again. It's a bit controversial, but I'm a strong believer in this. I've been for about 30 years now. It's one of my better known, better kept secrets, I would say, officially, which is that mass media, when it becomes truly mass, acquires a different character. Now, let me explain. Earlier, because of various restrictions on costs, you know, only the educated people could work for the media because it was all about a certain section of well-heeled media, middle class, talking to each other, using the newspapers or TV panels as a medium. And the cost of technology, in order to own a newspaper or a TV channel about 30, 40 years ago, you needed to have big capital, prime real estate, and location.
Absolutely.
All that is gone now. You can now sit in a corner of Amravati and run a TV channel for all of the world, if you want, or a YouTube channel, and digital technologies have dramatically lowered the cost of entry.
Correct.
And this is for the broadcasters or people who want to share their opinion. Today, I'm doing with my smartphone, I have 200,000 plus followers on Twitter, so my follower count is more than the circulation of some new leading newspapers.
Okay? Absolutely.
So I have, so that is one thing. The other thing is the cost of affordability has also gone down. You know, today's statistics that I read is India now has 750 million internet connections on the 25th anniversary of the introduction of the internet into the country.
Correct.
It's about 2/3 of this country's population has access to the internet now. Mm-hmm. What does this mean? It means that the technology has become pervasive, but the mindsets, the intellectual quality or lack of it, is essentially associated as you go down the mass. Okay.
Yeah.
So I was just joking yesterday. It was a quote from Richard Feynman, and the trouble with the masses is that sometimes the M is silent. So you have something which you would call the mediocrization of the news discourse.
Yeah.
Now, but the point is, thanks to social media and the lower cost of entry of various kinds of participants, they do not see themselves as anything inferior. They see as if their voices have been suppressed for all these years. So today, New York Times had a slogan called "All the news that is fit to print," based on the editorial discretion of what should be news. It has reached a point where, you know, I say one man's editing is another person's censorship. So they see it as censorship. So that has only created a lot of genuine pollution, such as fake news. And the propagandists who were forced to use advertising and to some extent PR as a medium now have a direct access to people through handles and social media and IT cells and stuff. So there is this whole syndrome of propagandists, PR people, mainstream journalists, political party spokespersons, NGOs, general activists, anonymous handles, all of them coming together on the single social media platform to shout whatever they want to, and that has basically created a babel of voices, you know, a tower of Babel, as it were. So yeah. That is also adding to the confusion, and therefore news as we knew it, or your father's idea of news, has been decimated. Mm-hmm. What has happened in news is just a mimicry of what happened in politics. So there used to be the populism. So to answer your question on whether readers want it, the answer seems to be yes, and partly because one market research showed in the US that right-wing audiences want affirmation, whereas the liberals want information.
That's true. And, you know, that's, do you see this also percolating into business, you know, media or business journalism as well? Because somewhere, some also feel that they are also getting in some ways polarized, you know, I mean, business reporting or business writing is also getting polarized.
Let me be a, give you a blunt view on that. You know, I've been a business journalist for 25, 30 years, and I can tell you, I was never too happy with the state of business journalism.
Okay.
Which is that, as it is, people, you hardly see a negative business story. You know, Outlook Business, for instance, ran some good negative stories. That's a rare exception among magazines. Most of the business stories are positive anyway. So it works through what I call the double positivity. Business magazines like to be positive about the business, journalists like to be positive about the businesses they write on, and businesses, for their own reason, like to be on the good books of the government, whoever is in, you know, even when they have disagreements with the government, they explain it very carefully. You know, it rarely does somebody like a Rahul Bajaj stand up and confront the government on some issues, because they have their own seniority and personality that goes back into confronting it. 99.9% of the business people either talk behind the backs on some issues, or they are on the side of whoever is in power. So, and business journalists also hardly ever discuss things. So there are issues which I feel, for instance, like shareholder value and corporate governance are rarely discussed in the news columns of business magazines or newspapers. Most of them are about which company is growing and which tycoon who's doing well and all that. Nobody really asks, or it's about whether policy will aid growth or not. There are other issues of social importance or political nuances or shareholder concerns are never really addressed by the business media. So, in a sense, business media was already sort of, I wouldn't say compromised, but I would say, I know a lot of business journalists are well-intentioned people. They are unscrupulous as far as, I mean, scrupulously honest as far as individual personalities that go.
Yes.
Are concerned. But they play to a certain gallery. And that gallery doesn't ask hard questions. So, in fact, you will rarely find a business press conference in which hard questions are asked. Whereas in political press conferences, the temperature is something you can sense whenever there is one.
Yeah, that's true.
In fact, well, you know, sometimes I watch those TV news channels or business channels, I feel I'll get diabetes. Everybody's being so sweet to each other.
That's true.
So, politically, they all increasingly... partly because there are financial issues and there are government advertisements. So there is a bit of a compromise on that front as well. They get instructions from bosses to be nice to the government because they don't want phone calls from ministers, or they don't want public sector companies or government advertisers coming away at a time when business models are under threat in the media. When mainstream media is struggling to survive and there are layoffs, very obviously you go where the safety and the money are. And that also creates its own compromises.
Yeah, so, you know, the last point that I wanted to discuss with you was on the, you know, recent move by government to regulate digital news media platforms and, you know, OTTs per se. So, you know, some, like what you rightly said, one man's editing is probably the other man's censorship, right? So how do you see this, you know, panning out? I mean, is this something that is going to really help in curbing fake news, bringing in more accountability, or is it something that's going to end up as more of a censorship than anything else?
Let me ask you a very simple question. Even if there is fake news, why? Who's the government to decide this? Because regulation, regulation is a special word. Regulation has a quasi-judicial character. you know, if you take the Telecom Regulatory Authority of India,
yeah,
it is not really part of the government of India. You know, it was spun off from the DoT and had a separate entity status.
Correct.
You had the Press Council of India, which is sort of autonomous, usually headed by a retired judge. It doesn't have punitive powers, but it has a somewhat regulatory quality in terms of rapping someone on the knuckle.
Okay.
Now, then you have the courts, which can actually hear cases subject on libel, defamation, or, you know, false. Then to some extent, consumer courts have heard about news being, not being properly given.
Mm-hmm.
But it's important to understand that in a democracy, mm-hmm. in a which promises free speech and freedom of the media,
mm-hmm.
The government is part of the problem. The problem cannot govern the problem.
Okay.
So if the government is close to the ruling party, and if the ruling party is promoting fake news, it begs the question as to how can you trust the government. And the other thing is that news media as an independent institution is supposed to be equidistant from everybody. It's often, to go back to our old talk about watchdog mm-hmm. is supposed to speak truth to power.
Yeah.
How can you speak truth to power when power tries to regulate you? So let's not mince words. It's not regulation, but control. Having said that, let me ask, if there is a case for regulation, I would say yes, some kind of regulation, because even the most liberal free speech activists don't like hate speech. Nobody likes fake news if they are. So fake news and hate speech are a very legitimate part of the media discourse that needs to be in some way controlled, managed, or eliminated.
Okay.
And the best way to do that is to in some way regulate it. But who's going to regulate it? To some extent, we have fact-checking websites as a community-based initiative. The government may be on the right path in trying to do something about it, but mm-hmm. keeping it under the ministry's control is not the thing. Maybe they should talk to the judiciary. Maybe they should try some, you know, they tried self-regulation, but as you know, even the News Broadcasters Association has two of them now. The political divides and the ideological divides have also resulted in the association divides.
Okay.
So just as you had Chambers of Commerce, what happened in the Chambers of Commerce in the good old days?
Yeah.
You had traditional family-controlled companies controlling one Chamber of Commerce, and the slightly more modern companies going to another Chamber of Commerce, and there was a third Chamber of Commerce that existed essentially for the business tycoons to get access to policymakers.
Correct.
So I've seen that happen. That is happening in the self-regulation business of news. So we know that self-regulation either has its limits or has already failed. If that is the case, who's going to regulate it? So logically speaking, the matter should be considered but not controlled by the government.
Okay.
And the government can facilitate some kind of a regulation in which a combination of self-regulation or the judicial involvement or highly professional engagement can come into play.
Okay.
But, you also have this phenomenon of what are the laws under which you will govern them? Because the freedom of expression, you know, you can't go to jail for lying, by the way, unless it is lying to a court or lying in a certain...
True.
So what are the laws that will govern fake news? That is a legislative matter. Matter. And how will you distinguish between independent media that is essentially digital in character, let's say a News Minute or a very good, you know, legitimate, what I respect, outlets like, let's say, the News Minute or the print, maybe. But there are also some digital media entities. It may be an Op India from the right or the Wire from the left that have an ideological character, like which are part of the freedom of expression. So if regulating news goes into the realm of regulating freedom of expression, we have run into another problem.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And then you have the syndrome where there is a social media as an entity. Lots of people noisily discuss things in YouTube channels. By the way, YouTube is one of the biggest sources of fake news, if you ask me.
Correct.
So it's born on YouTube and travels on WhatsApp.
Yeah.
It's not even Twitter. At least in Twitter, there are people who are trying to shout you down. But in a lot of fake news, completely slanderous stuff, baseless stuff, gets created in YouTube videos, and even porn travels on Instagram and Facebook, I've seen. So how do you control essentially social media? Because digital media, so there should be an incentive mechanism where some digital media entities can have access to press conferences, accreditation and stuff, which is a good carrot and stick strategy, which is not a bad idea. But I do not think we can have the government controlling the media. If there is regulation, it should be based on guidelines. It should have a clear purpose. It should have a clear understanding of what are the laws it's trying to implement. And it should have a structure that is trustworthy and truly independent, because you cannot have an ad hoc one fine morning notification from the government saying from here on the government shall regulate you. And that is not regulation, that is control.
Yeah, okay. That's interesting. So thanks, Madhavan. Thanks for your time. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Tune in next week for another episode of Mrugashira. Adios.